So Elisha was a prophet. Now, one of the things you need to know about prophets is they were not the most liked people in the world. Prophets often were right at the center of conflict. One of their jobs was basically to call out things like injustice. And so along the way, they would often be calling out those who had power and were using it unjustly, those who were hurting other people. And so obviously that makes them unpopular people, especially with the people who have the power who don't want to be called out. And the prophets believed that they were speaking the very words of God, that God was speaking to them, and they were channeling that to speak to other people, calling people back to live a certain way, calling people to live in light of the way God wanted them to live. And so you can understand that when that became offensive to people, when certain people were called out and publicly called out, it could get violent. That the prophets were often people who were under threat. Their lives were under threat. That kings and religious leaders, people whose lives were based on their reputation and the way that they could rule the people, when a prophet comes along and says, actually, God is saying that you're the problem and that you need to live and act and rule in a different way, that was really threatening. And so the threat got turned around oftentimes on the prophets. That happened to Elisha. There's this story about where there's a conflict. Elisha was a prophet to the kingdom of Israel. And at the time of Elisha, their greatest enemy was the Syrians. And there was this time where the Syrians were plotting an attack. They were going to try and kill the king of Israel. And they had sort of set a trap for him. And Elisha had got this idea figured out about this trap. And so he goes to the king of Israel and he warns him not to go the way that he was going to go, because the king of Israel was going to go the way right through the trap where the king of Syria and his army was waiting and they were going to kill him. And so he foils the whole plan. Now the king of Syria, realizing that his plan is foiled, looks around and goes, what happened? Who tipped him off? How did the king of Israel know not to come this way? And he's looking at his advisors and all this kind of stuff, trying to figure out how it is that they could have figured out the plot and made him unsuccessful. And they kind of look around and go, I don't know what happened, but we've heard that there's this prophet of Israel around. We hear that there's this guy, Elisha, and here's where he's at, and we think maybe he's the problem. Maybe he's the one that tipped him off. And so the king of Syria gets so mad that he sends an entire army. He sends horses and chariots, and they go to the city where Elisha is, and they surround the whole thing, and it's at nighttime, and you got to think, man, prophets, they got to have thick skin. They must be strong people, but you could understand the incredible threat that they would be under. You could understand just how threatening, how scary, how frightening they would be, absolutely terrified that this great army has come, circled the entire city, coming for just you, that your death is imminent, that you look around and you would have had to ask, how are we going to get out of this? This incredibly powerful threat that's come after us. And Elisha is sitting there with his servant, with his young servant, and his servant wakes up and he sees the horses and the chariots, the army, and he cries out, alas, my master, what shall we do? What are we going to do? This incredibly powerful force is against us, going to attack us, going to kill us. Elisha's name means my God is salvation. And man, did they need God to save them. And I don't know if you've ever felt that way. I mean, maybe not exactly that way, like an actual army surrounding you. Most of us haven't been in that situation, of course. But I wonder if you've ever felt like there's a major threat to your life where somebody's come against you. Maybe somebody's attacked you. Perhaps it was an attack verbally. Maybe it was even an attack physically. Maybe it was an attack emotionally or even financially. But there were these forces that came against you that made you feel insecure, made you feel like you needed some kind of power to fight. Maybe it was in a relationship, maybe somebody you don't even know, but I wonder if you ever felt that way, felt like you were surrounded. And when you looked out on the horizon, you saw everything that was against you and were overwhelmed by how powerful those forces were. And maybe you thought to yourself, man, I need God to show up. I need God to save us, to save me. You know, our world, not just us as individuals, but our world continues to ask that question. How will we overpower our enemies? We've got enemies on our personal level. We've got enemies kind of on a communal level and even a global level. And this is a question that is just plaguing all of us that we all have to ask. When we see those threats, when we see them happening, whether it's something small in our own lives, whether it's something huge on the world stage and we see kind of nations rising up against nations and we wonder what's going on and how this is going to play out, and we ask ourselves, how are we going to overpower our enemies? How are we going to overpower this threat? Is God going to come through? And there's a lot of answers of how people figure that out, how people figure out what we're going to do. Maybe we need bigger armies. Maybe we need smarter armies. Maybe we need more powerful weapons. How do we access something that's so powerful that we could overcome our enemies, that we can resist, that we can overcome, that we can be victorious, that we can win back our safety and our security in our world? And it's a dangerous world, isn't it? Jesus talked about that specifically and what we should do when we're hurt or injured by other people, and we could probably take this in a whole realm of different places, but when people come against us, when people attack us, whether it's physical, sometimes not physical, and how we should respond. And today I want to read that, and I kind of want to warn you that whenever I teach about this, this is one of the most controversial topics that Jesus taught on. And it is one of the ones that I will say, after I teach on these teachings that Jesus have, more than any other topic, Christian people come and say, "Ah, I'm not so sure. Oh, that doesn't seem very practical. Oh, I don't know if we can accept that." And it is one of the distinctive teachings of Jesus. It is so powerful that I hope today you'll follow along with it. And where it makes you uncomfortable and where you're not really sure and where you continue to ask the question that if we are attacked in some way, personally or kind of communally, could we really go along with what Jesus teaches on it? Just stay with me. Hear me out. And come back to that question. How do we really think we will overpower our enemies? How do we really think we will disarm those who come against us and attack us? This is a teaching from Matthew chapter 5. We've been working through a section of the Sermon on the Mount. This is Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38. Jesus says, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go to 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you." Now let me ask you this. When you read that, when you hear that, how does that make you feel? Probably, for a lot of us, there's a bunch of objections that come up that make us feel uncomfortable. So we think about vulnerable people. We think about people who are abused. We think of people who are the abuser, people who hurt other people, hit each other, people who perpetrate financial scams and take people for all that they're worth. And we read a passage like this, and we say, so if somebody hits you, you're supposed to let them hit you again. If somebody sues you, you're supposed to give them even more. If somebody forces you to go 1 mile, you're supposed to go 2 miles. If somebody begs from you, just keep giving, giving, giving. Does this not just leave us as doormats? Does this just mean that our attackers will win? Does this not just mean that injustice will rule the day and there's nothing that we can do about it? And probably, if you really think about it, because most people do, you read something like this and you've got the objections. This can't be practical. Can it? Is this really how we're supposed to respond when people injure us, attack us, come against us, whether it's a physical attack, whether it's emotional or financial attack? Are we really supposed to apply this? Does this really make sense? Or is Jesus setting people up to be abused, to be walked all over? What are we supposed to do with it? Let's walk through the passage together. Let's start with this eye for an eye for an eye, and tooth for a tooth. This is Jesus quoting from the Old Testament. Again, we've seen that throughout this series, coming back to something that his audience would have known, something that they would have had is their interpretation, and Jesus quotes it. It comes from Leviticus 24. This is from part of the laws of Israel, and it says, "Whoever takes a human life shall surely be put to death. Whoever takes an animal's life shall make it good, life for life. If anyone injures his neighbor as he has done it, shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Whatever injury is given to a person shall be given to him. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, and whoever kills a person shall be put to death. You shall have the same rule for the sojourner and for the native, for I am the Lord your God." So here's the law. what somebody's done to you, you can do to them. This law, when it was written thousands of years ago, was actually fairly redemptive. In a world where retribution was a big deal, this was a law that put limits, restrictions on getting even. Saying if somebody has hurt you, if somebody's done something to you, if somebody's broken your arm, if somebody's committed murder, then the limit on what you can do back to them is what they've done to you. And then it's over. The law here is equal pain. They cause you pain, you can cause them pain, but you can't cause them more pain than they have caused you. You can't go beyond what they have done you. It's a restriction on retribution, on getting even. So if somebody, kind of a minor assault on you, you can't go and kill them. You can only dish out the punishment that is just for what has happened. And so Jesus quotes that. He says, you know that, and this makes sense to most of us. The punishment fits the crime. This is how it goes. And people, you know, you read that and you go, well, that's fair. You do something bad happens to you. You hurt somebody, you get hurt. But Jesus goes further, as we've seen all the way through this series, and he says, but I say to you, don't resist the one who is evil. Don't resist the one who is evil. And that we have a hard time with that because we say, well, shouldn't we be resisting evil? Shouldn't we be fighting back? And as we look through this, we're going to look. Jesus will then give us a few illustrations of how this might look. He doesn't give us laws. He gives us stories that we might look at and say, oh, what do we learn from how this teaching goes and the response in this teaching? But we start with this, do not resist evil. And this is what you need to understand about that term. In the Greek version of the Old Testament, so the Old Testament originally written in Hebrew, eventually translated into Greek when that becomes the major language by the time of Jesus. And this word that Jesus uses here is one that is used dozens of times in the Old Testament. And more often than not, what it means is, it refers to violent resistance. When Jesus is talking about this, he's saying, don't resist evil. His primary meaning here is, do not violently resist evil. And that's important because what we're going to see is Jesus doesn't say, oh, just don't worry about it, become a doormat. But what he is going to say is, we're going to be careful how we resist. We're going to be careful how we fight back when there's injustice and when we have been hurt. So he starts with this example. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. So I want to show you how this works a little bit. I need a little visual for you. So I need a volunteer to come on up here. I'm not going to make you say anything. I just need to act this out. So preferably someone who wouldn't mind punching me in the face. Anybody? I'm serious. I need a volunteer. Somebody come on up just for a second. I'm not going to embarrass you a little bit. No, I'm not going to embarrass you. I just need to act this out. I'm not kidding. I need a volunteer. Okay, come on up. Yeah. Do you really want to hit me in the face? No, that was good. It took you a long time, and no, nobody wanted to do it. I get it. Okay, come on up. Come right over here. Yeah, watch it. All right, we're just pretending. But it says, Jesus says, Jesus says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek. So let's say we get into a bit of a fight, and now it's going to get a little bit violent, and you're going to hit me on the right cheek. This is the right cheek over here. Okay, so if you're going to hit me on the right cheek, what are you going to do? Go for it. No, don't hit me, but just kind of do a... So you're going to hit me over here. What are you going to do? Well, okay, there you go. What hand did you use? The left hand. Okay, that's how most of us would strike somebody on the right cheek. We'd use our left hand that we're facing them. But in Jesus' culture, using the left hand is a no-no. In fact, there's a community called Qumran right around Jesus where if you even gestured at somebody with a left hand, you could be fined for that. It was a really big deal. You could be in a problem because the left hand is a hand that you use to do unclean things with. You can use your imagination what that means, especially in a culture 2,000 years ago where they didn't necessarily have all of the amenities that we have. You can think about that. But the left hand is off limits. Even in fighting, there were rules because if you got in a fight, you could be fined. But if you fought somebody and you hit them with your left hand like you did to me, bad, 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 you would be fined 100 times more. And you could be kicked out of the community because you would be unclean for days. And so even if we were really, really mad, we probably wouldn't use our left hands even to fight. So left hand is off limits. So put it behind your back. but you still got to hit me on the right cheek, as Jesus said. So now, how are you going to hit me on the right cheek? Exactly. There you go. Do you see what she did? She took her right hand and she did a backhanded slap. Thank you very much. You can go back to your seat. And she didn't actually hit me. Well done. So what happened there? When you hit somebody with your backhand, that is another no-no. You can't hit somebody who is an equal with a backhanded slap. That is what somebody does when they are in a power position to somebody who doesn't have power. So in a culture that is very patriarchal, sexist, racist, on and on, that's something that, say, a master would do to a slave to put him back in his place. A backhanded slap across the face. I'm in charge. You do what I tell you to do. And if you don't, I put you back into place. It's something that maybe a man would do to a woman to put her in her place. It might be something a parent does to a child to put them in their place. But it is not something that equals can do to one another. Again, fines are bigger. It's a bigger deal. It's a huge, huge insult to hit somebody like that. So when Jesus says, if somebody hits you on the right cheek, probably not left-handed. If it is left-handed, then it's a sucker punch. Anyways, that's pretty disrespectful. Or it's a right-handed, backhanded slap to the cheek saying, I am better than you, putting you in your place. Jesus says, if somebody does that to you, you turn him the other cheek. In other words, you make him hit you like an equal. You stand up for yourself. Notice, you don't hit him back. But you stand up for yourself. You illuminate to your attacker the injustice that they have just committed, the injury, the insult that they have done by giving them the other cheek and saying, if you're going to hit me like we're equals. Not like you're better than me, not like you have the power and I don't have any power. Jesus is, in an amazing way, taught someone to stand up for themselves without stooping to the level of their attacker. Oh, you just become a doormat and let them. No. You stand up with strength and creatively show them that you won't be treated that way and that you will also not treat them the way that they have treated you. It's amazing. It's this powerful, powerful tool to say, I'm not stooping to your level, but I'm also not accepting the insult that you've given to me. And so if we're going to do this, we're going to do this a different way. We might ask, are we literally supposed to sit there and get pummeled by somebody? I don't think that's what Jesus is teaching. Just stand there and get beaten and get beaten and get beaten. But maybe we're supposed to use our imagination to find ways to use our strength to overcome violence in a nonviolent way. Maybe Jesus is pointing to the fact that there are other options. And sometimes we think in binaries. Somebody hits me, I can hit them back, or I can just keep taking punches. And maybe Jesus is saying, be more creative than that. Use your strength, not to do what they've done to you, but to approach the situation in a different way, in a powerful way. Illustration number two. If somebody sues you for your tunic, give him your cloak also. So here's the situation of the background. Probably means you've been taken to court. Obviously, you've been taken to court. Somebody's suing you literally for the shirt off your back, which means they've gone for everything. The most common situation where this would arise is where you had a powerful Roman probably forcing a Jew into debt and then trying to sue them for every last penny that they have. And so again, you probably have someone who's fairly powerless being sued by somebody who's probably very powerful, and they are suing you literally for everything that you have. Now, the background back in Exodus of the whole cloak and the tunic thing is this. This is, again, part of the laws of Israel. It says, if you lend money to any of my people with who is poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. So the Israelites had this idea, like, we're not supposed to enslave each other, so if you're lending money, don't take the interest. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, so somebody gives their coat, basically, to say, I'm going to pay you back, here it is, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, and it is cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. So here's the rule, is, okay, if you've somebody's borrowed money from you and they give you their cloak, you need to know that they need their cloak back because that is how they stay warm at night. They don't have anything else. And so if that's the pledge, hey, I'm coming back for my coat and I'll give you your money, make sure he gets it back before nighttime or else he's going to freeze. It's going to be so cold. That's inhumane. And God says, I'm compassionate. I'm going to hear him. So you should be compassionate too. Don't do that. So then we go back to the example that Jesus gets. He says, if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, which is kind of the undergarment, then he says, then give him your cloak as well. Now, understand this. You got the tunic, which is kind of the undergarment, and you got the cloak, which is sort of like the coat that goes over it that you're not supposed to take away from somebody longer than a day because they need it to stay warm. Those are the only two garments most people would have worn. So if here you are in court and you lose your tunic, you go there. Jesus says, oh, if somebody's suing you and taking you for every last thing, they take your tunic, go ahead and give them your cloak also. So if you give your tunic and your cloak, what are you wearing? So here you are standing in court, buck naked. You go, Jesus, why on earth would you do that? Again, to illuminate the injustice that is happening. In that society, looking on someone's nakedness is a shameful thing. It's actually more shameful to look at somebody who's naked in a context like this than to be the person that's naked in a context like this. And Jesus is going, if somebody's going to that level to take everything that you have and leave you just with the cloak, which is the one thing that nobody should be able to take from you, just give them the cloak as well. And guess what that shows? The injustice that you are enduring. Hey, you want to take from me? Take everything. Take it all. Illuminating. Kind of that evil, kind of that, you know, and Jesus is saying, hey, it's not about retribution. You don't, it's eye for eye. It's, you know, most of us would say, how do I take something from them? How do I sue them back? And Jesus goes, no, why don't you just give them everything if that's what they're after? And the shame and the embarrassment will point out the injustice. Incredible injustice that you are enduring. Illustration number 3. If anyone forces you to go a mile, go with him a second mile. So this is referring to Roman soldiers. Roman soldiers at that time, legally, were allowed to go to a Jew, basically give them all their heavy stuff, and force them to carry it for a mile. And so if you were a Jew and a Roman soldier came along, whatever you were doing, you're in the middle of the workday or you're with your family, whatever it is that you're doing, Roman soldier comes and he says, let's go, take my pack, take all my stuff, carry my burdens, walk with me a mile. They could do that up to a mile. Now, there are a lot of Jews, some Jews anyway, there was a section of Jews who were called zealots. And zealots' idea of how they were going to overthrow the Romans, is that they were going to fight. And they were going to fight with military strength. And that was their thing. And they were always looking for the military leader that would come and overthrow the Romans and give them back their full freedom. And so the zealots, if a Roman soldier came and wanted to press them into service, they would find this so insulting, so horrible, so awful, that not only are you my enemy, but now I have to work for you. The zealots would say, that's the time you take out your sword and you fight. Jesus says, don't only go a mile, but go an extra mile with them. Why? Soldier might even get in trouble for that. Soldier's allowed to take you a mile, not allowed to make you go more than a mile. And so by going more than a mile, you're showing, hey, if you're gonna grind me down, you're gonna make me do your work, you're gonna make me go a whole mile, I'm gonna stand up in strength, I'm gonna go 2 miles and show you how much I can endure. I'm gonna show you how unfair it is that you will call me to do this, and I will go even further than you make me. And maybe the superior looks and says, why'd you make this guy go more than a mile? You can't do that. That's not lawful. We don't know. But illustration number 3, you go even further, even longer. Stand up for yourself. Endure. Use your strength to illuminate the injustice that is being put on you. And then finally, Jesus says, give to the one who begs from you and don't refuse the one who would borrow from you. When somebody asks you for something, you must need it. And so I'll give to you. When we're supposed to borrow, you borrow. And we go back to where Jesus started, and he said, you've heard the laws, an eye for an eye. If somebody causes you pain, you can cause them the same amount of pain. That is fair. Jesus calls his followers to break the cycle of retribution. In other words, don't treat people poorly because they treat you poorly. Don't answer violence with violence. Don't continue the cycle of getting even, because people are coming after you doesn't mean you have to come after them. And Jesus does it in such a brilliant way. He doesn't do it by saying, and just be a doormat, let people walk over you. He says, do it by standing up strong, not bending to other people's level, not getting down in that cycle of retribution, saying, if you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you, but by enduring, by going above and beyond, by being creative in the options that are out there in order to show love instead of hate. So Jesus says, do not resist. What he means is do not violently resist. Do not angrily resist. Jesus teaches us to actively resist passivity as we nonviolently resist violence. Fight back, but not the way that you have been fought. Fight back with love. Fight back with endurance. Fight back with self-sacrifice. Fight back with all the creativity that you have in you to say, I can endure this situation, and I can even show you how unjust this situation is without doing to you what you have done to me. And we look at all those situations where we say, oh, but is this practical, and oh, does it leave people vulnerable? And I really don't think Jesus is saying, stand in there and take a punch and over and over abuse this teaching and let yourself be abused. But what Jesus is saying is, it's time to break the cycle. Because you know what it looks like when somebody hurts you and you hurt them? It looks the same. You go, oh, that's fair. Yes, that's fair. But God is not fair. And so he calls us also not to be fair, not to get even, but to go beyond it, to find a power that is even greater than the power that's coming against us. So here's Elisha, surrounded by his enemies, sees how powerful they are, must have been terrified. His servant's so scared, and rightfully so, seems like they're doomed, and they're looking for power. They're looking for some kind of power that can save them. God, we need power. And you might think, what would the options be here? Man, maybe the Israelite army will roll around the corner and wipe them out. You know, maybe all of a sudden a bunch of weapons will appear and, you know, we'll just blast through and be victorious and all this kind of stuff. But here's what happens. Elisha said to his servant, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. All of a sudden, his eyes are open. You know, all he could see before was the powerful army and their powerful weapons and their powerful horses and their powerful chariots, thinking, we need our own army. And Elisha prays, oh God, that he would see something that he can't see right now, that he would be tuned into a spiritual reality that right now he's not tuned into. And all of a sudden, his eyes are open and he realizes that there is a force that is so much more powerful than all those horses and chariots, that the army of angels surrounds them. That now the most powerful source that they could ever imagine is right there working on their behalf. And the Syrian army is blinded. And in all the chaos, Elisha and his servant run to safety. And when we read about Jesus and how he asks us to deal with violence, how he asks us to deal with those who come against us, I wonder if so often in our world, our eyes are closed to the most powerful force available to us. That if all we see is we need more violence to stamp out violence, we need a bigger army to stamp out the bad army, we need to fight stronger, we need to fight smarter, we need to fight bigger, we need more powerful weapons, and what if what the world really needed was our eyes to be opened up to a spiritual reality that behind all of our conflicts, behind all of the wars, behind all of the fighting, behind all of the violence, there are forces fighting, and the greatest force is the love of God. and you say, I just don't know if it can work. Listen, if you're a follower of Jesus, you follow one who, when he was violently attacked, beaten, and nailed to a cross, and the one who had all of those armies of heaven available to him, instead endured it. And you say, I don't know if I can work. If you're a follower of Jesus, that's how it works. The one who is powerful enough to stand up to injustice and show the world how wrong it is, even if it means dying on the cross, because he's the one who knows the power of the resurrection, Jesus being raised from the dead. The power of a non-violent response. Perhaps as Christians in a world where we know so much violence, it's time for our eyes to be open to the power of Jesus, the power of nonviolent resistance, the power of not engaging violence with violence, the power of creatively standing up for justice and what is right without doing it in a way that is wrong, the power of laying down one's life rather than taking someone else's, the power of the cross and the power of the resurrection. It is the power of overcoming evil with good. And so whatever you face, whatever bothers you, maybe it's personal, maybe it's watching the news and we see all the conflicts all over the world. And we wonder, how are we going to get out of this mess? How is good going to overcome? Perhaps our prayer needs to be that our eyes would be opened to the incredible power of the love of God that overcomes everything. Heavenly Father, God, I want to pray today because our lives and our world seem to continually be stuck in conflict. God, real conflict in which people are hurt, people are offended, people are insulted, people are attacked, people are killed. God, today I pray that in our hearts and in our world, you would breathe this revolutionary teaching freshly and new. Would you give us courage to really trust that doing things your way is the most powerful way that we can live? Would you help us to truly trust that the greatest weapons we have available to us are spiritual weapons, weapons of love and grace, the weapon of your Holy Spirit that changes people's hearts and orients us back towards you? God, for those of us who have been victims of violence, I pray for healing. God, I pray for your love. God, give us courage not to stay in situations where we are being abused or hurt, but God, that you would free us up in creative ways. God, we would pray that you would breathe restoration into the lives of people who have been hurt. And God, that you would breathe conviction into the lives of people who have hurt others. And God, we pray for a broken world, that you would continue to show this different way, this greater way, that our eyes would be opened to a greater reality than the cycles of violence and retribution that we so often become part of. God, would you bring heaven to earth as we find new and fresh creative ways to trust you and to love others well. In Christ's name.